Hello and welcome to Thrive at Work. Today's discussion focuses on leadership for businesses that are in the process of scaling up. The scale-up phase is certainly a time of exciting growth, but this can also bring many challenges. I'm so pleased today to be joined by my guest, Richard Lowe, Managing Director of Hewlett Rand Consultancy, which provides bespoke training and consultancy to businesses to help them grow. Richard has a fantastic Dragonfly Academy to support businesses that are scaling up by helping managers become more effective leaders. And I'm sure we'll discuss more about that in the discussion. Welcome, Richard. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Hello, Polly, and thanks very much for inviting me along today to talk to you.
I should say, actually, we are actually together in person recording this, which is a bit of a treat because usually the podcasts are recorded remotely via Zoom. So it's quite nice to actually get together with Richard in person and sit together to record this. So thank you, Richard, for your time. I wonder if we might start by, if you wouldn't mind, just talking briefly about your background and how you come to be doing what you're doing today.
Sure, Polly. Well, I've been in L&D for about 25 years. I started my career with the AA, my corporate career, I should say, with the AA in sales leadership. And essentially, after climbing the ladder into sales leadership, I moved and took a sideways step into training because they changed the structure of the L&D team. And
right.
That meant that I got into the profession of L&D, moved to Orange, helped Orange set up their retail training division. Before I moved to Unum, UK, which is a subsidiary of an American insurance company, and ascended the ladder there. And basically, I finished my corporate career as head of learning and development at Unum UK before I set up Hewlett Rand as a training and digital learning consultancy.
Brilliant. Thank you for that. I have to say, Richard, I noticed on your LinkedIn profile that you describe yourself as the training alchemist. I was quite interested to see that. What's the story behind that?
Well, the word alchemy means transforming things for the better. And that's what I believe training does. So in my work with leadership, management and sales teams, really it's all about transforming skills so that individuals, teams and businesses achieve better results.
Brilliant, thank you.
And the Training Alchemist, actually, the idea of the name Training Alchemist actually came from a book by Charles Handy called The New Alchemist.
Okay.
And basically what he described an alchemist to be, in terms of characteristics, was that they see things that others don't see.
Right.
And I think as HR and training professionals, we go in with a different pair of eyes. And we can spot things sometimes that the business can't see. So I always think we're doing a bit of alchemy.
Mm.
We're identifying things that are missing and trying to fill that gap, whether that's a training need gap or whether that's a HR gap or process or whatever. So I thought alchemy is a good word to use. That's what we do. We're there to help the business perform better by spotting opportunities where we can do a little bit of magic.
Excellent, thank you. Yeah, I think also it's, identifying those gaps, but also, you know, lifting the blinkers for others to see as well and raising awareness and help them to see and raise awareness of what they could be doing better, when perhaps they hadn't seen that before. Sometimes people get so busy in the day-to-day that they don't necessarily notice how they can make small changes to make big, to achieve better and bigger results, I think. Okay, great. So what training services do you provide for clients?
Well, there's probably sort of four real key areas that we specialise in at Hewlett Rand. The first is, I would say these are problems that we solve, really. The first problem we solve is around scale up and high growth businesses to support leadership teams to create better clarity and alignment to execute strategic plans.
Mm-hmm.
So we do quite a lot of work with top teams facilitating and helping them to get clear on their strategy as a team,
Right.
And then also to help them build high performance team working as a top team.
Right.
The second is solving people and team management issues by training new and refreshing the skills of line managers so that they can motivate, manage individuals and team performance and develop their teams for the better. I'd say the third area is around solving sales team performance issues, particularly how to grow new clients and build long-term value from clients and the skills associated with that,
mm-hmm.
Particularly in B2B sales teams. And the third and the final area really is digital learning, because we do some of our work is converting knowledge into e-learning modules, and that can be fixed content, or it can be delivering training online virtually to remote teams. So we've done work internationally via Zoom, you know, that's the way it's all going now, isn't it? Hybrid training. So online now means skills delivery online as well as fixed content.
And have you seen a big growth in that fourth area in particular since the pandemic?
Well, we've had no alternative. the lockdown kind of forced us all to go online. And now I think what we're seeing is the emergence of hybrid ways of delivering training. So I think we're going to see a richer blended learning approach to training delivery.
Yes, but when I said, you know, has that area grown for you, I just wondered if for you, almost like sometimes it feels like the world has almost opened up a bit more because, yes, we're all on technology now and using these amazing amazing platforms to deliver our services. But I just want, you know, there is no limit now geographically, whereas before perhaps we didn't really even think about going out of our own immediate country or immediate vicinity.
Well, the answer is yes. Ironically, I thought that the pandemic would limit our ability to be able to train people. The irony is that actually it's opened up a whole new market. So I've been delivering training in China, been delivering, you know, training more remotely to different geographical areas of the UK. And ironically, for businesses, it's opened up an opportunity. A recent project has been with HSBC,
mm-hmm.
where we've been training geographically dispersed teams in ways in which they've never learnt together before. So we've been able to draw in business development people in Australia, with business development people in Japan and China, and they can learn together. So not only are they learning skills together, but they're fostering relationships together, which is helping them to work better with their clients in offering global solutions.
Brilliant. Gosh, that's really amazing. Right. Yes, the first thing you talked about of the four areas was actually scale up, and I think that was the actual topic that we were going to focus on today. So what do we actually mean by a scale up as opposed to perhaps a startup? What do we mean by a scale up?
Well, there is a definition of a scale up, which is defined by the Organisation Economic Cooperation and Development Organisation, which defines it as a business of 10 full-time employees and 20% team increase year on year, with a projected turnover of between sort of $1 to $3 million. So a scale-up really is a company that is looking to grow. It's not a lifestyle business. It's not a business going to be static. It's a business that has some real potential to grow, not just domestically, but also internationally. So that really is the definition. However, I'm not a purist, because I think that a scale-up can also mean a business being acquired by somebody with a different vision and a different growth trajectory for that business. That can also, for me, be a scale-up. So I'm not a purist in that sense. I think that scale-up to me is to do with ambition, and it's to do with growth, and it's to do with extending the reach of a business, not just domestically, but also internationally. And of course, that means that they've got to have a product or service that is in demand.
Yeah, great, absolutely. You're currently focusing on scale-ups for one particular area of your business. And I mentioned earlier the sort of Dragonfly Academy that you have. Tell me more about that, and how does the Dragonfly Academy work?
Dragonfly came as a result of working with SMEs over the years. And what I realised is that in order to create sustainable and embedded change and drive up the skills of top teams, you need to work with them at least once every quarter.
Mm-hmm.
So what I've done is I've packaged together a program that brings in a lot of different skill sets into a training program and a facilitation program to help top teams really accelerate their focus and their growth and their skills at the same time, because inevitably, as a scale-up grows, the skills of the leaders grow with it, or have to grow with it. If they don't, then that can actually thwart the growth of the business. So Dragonfly really is a solution to that problem. It's about helping the leaders grow alongside the scale-up of their business.
Yes, brilliant. So is it a set course for a certain amount of time, or how does that all, or is it very bespoke to each business? How does that work?
You're absolutely right. It's a bespoke solution because every business and every team will be different.
Yeah.
There is a core element of the program that is set in stone, which is around driving their plan, driving their strategy for growth. And what we do with every Dragonfly program is we do a diagnostic. So we will go in, we'll understand the business, we'll understand the team and the training needs. And then that program will basically pull in the different skill sets that they need to plug the gaps as they grow. There is a core product, but layered on top of that are skills modules along the way that drive up their skills as leaders and managers in the business. Because you know the leadership pipeline. As leaders grow, let's take an entrepreneur. They come in, they start their business, they start to recruit a team. The first line of supervision is there. So that's the first turn, we call that. The first turn of leadership is managing a team well. The second turn is, as the business scales up, is that you end up managing managers who are managing other people. And that's what we call the second turn, which is where you're no longer managing a direct team, you're actually managing managers who manage teams.
Yes, yep.
And on and on and on and on. So at each turn of a leader's journey, as they scale up and grow a business, demands new capabilities and new skills. And there's a very, very good book which describes this really well, called Executive Leadership. It's which I read many, many years ago. It describes this phenomenon, not this phenomenon, but the fact that you should, as you grow up an organisation, your focus as a leader needs to change, because you're no longer going to be operational. You're going to have to put more attention to strategy, PR, those sorts of skill sets, because, you know, you're going to have to be looking well out into the future. Whereas an entrepreneur is just probably looking at today, tomorrow, next week, next month. So, you know, that is the leadership pipeline. That's the leadership journey. And Dragonfly aims to plug some of those gaps as the business moves into its scale-up phase.
Great, thank you for that. It seems to me that it's timing is quite important. You know, at which point do you bring in someone to help with marketing, at which point do you, you know, actually think about your organisational structure, you know, what it's going to look like in 6 months, 12 months? You know, when do you think about, how early do you think about what skills you're going to need to bring in so that you've got those skills in place when you need them? That's how it seems to me. Is that what you see?
People don't know what they don't know. And, you know, you're absolutely right. The enlightened entrepreneur, hopefully they've got a mentor or a coach working with them that realises that this business is growing and it's appropriate to bring in some development support for the team. That really is the trigger point for me. Because if you don't support that leadership team in its infancy, what will happen it potentially is you could end up growing a dysfunctional culture and a dysfunctional team working. And new remember, as a scale-up is growing, you're bringing in new people, new dynamics. So it's really important to keep the cohesion and to keep the alignment as the business scales up. So that work with the top team is central. You know, the famous quote, get the right people on the bus and then decide where you're going to go, is true. So getting the right people in to your top team is the first thing, but then keeping them in the business, giving them the right skills and tools that they need to support them to grow the business is also essential. And that's again, I'm going back to, that's where this program really fits in. It's about building the team as it grows. And it could mean that people are joining that team, you know, as the business is scaling.
Yes.
So,
great. Thank you. Do you, would you encourage, you know, entrepreneurs that are growing their business to sort of buy in skills by way of contractors or, you know, external people to come in and plug a gap temporarily while they figure out what they're doing slightly more longer term? Is that something you would encourage? Is that something you see a lot?
Well, as I say, you know, we've worked with SMEs. I mean, I've been doing this for 15 years and I've worked with charities, SMEs, you know, private sector, public sector, some public sector. I think you can look at this as in terms of short-term fixes. What SMEs need are practical solutions. They want an immediate solution to an immediate problem. It's much more action learning centred.
Yeah.
So it tends to be much more, I find, facilitative with components of learning being brought in. You have to think on your feet when you work with an SME.
Yes, yeah.
Because they want immediate solutions to an immediate problem generally.
Yes, and they're able to act quickly as well, aren't they? They don't have layers of bureaucracy. They can actually make decisions very quickly and act quite fast.
Yeah, and you can give them a concept, a tool or a principle very quickly and they can turn that into something of value fairly quickly.
Yeah.
So what I think is it's the continuity. And you're not necessarily embedding. That's why a program's better. A program of support is better than a quick fix.
Yes.
So what I like to do with Dragonfly is I'm not just there for sort of one intervention. I'm there for several interventions over a year.
Right.
But they've got me as their almost, you know, their training, their outside training consultant that's coming in supporting that team. So you almost work in a quite adaptive and organic way with the team, because what they might need in January, by April, other things have happened. So, you know, we need to be quite fluid with the programme as well.
Yes.
Into what's happening.
Absolutely. So you're almost like their mentor, seeing them through that journey and adapting as they go as well. So what sort of common challenges do you see with organisations that are scaling up and growing at quite a fast rate?
They are juggling a lot, the top team, because remember we're just focusing obviously on the top team.
Right.
So the issues that I commonly see in top teams and SMEs is that they don't have a plan together. They don't necessarily know what each other's accountabilities and responsibilities are sometimes. And that can be, I mean, in some SMEs, I've seen no job descriptions. In some SMEs, I've seen very good job descriptions. So clarity of role, clarity of what people are delivering at the top, clarity of who's going to do what. And so the accountability piece, I think, is important. But also some of the issues around not letting go. So in SMEs, you tend to find you need to help the top team to empower people more. Otherwise, they hold on to a lot. And that actually thwarts progress. That thwarts the potential growth of the business. So these are why skills like coaching, leading your team well, are essential, I think. They're core components that you need in a program to release the potential of the wider teams.
Yes.
So those are those can be problems, is that also the flexibility of the leaders in terms of their adaptability to different people and managing and leading different people. Some people might need a bit more direction. Some people might need a bit more coaching. Some people just need to be completely empowered. And because they've got the skills and the capability, they just need to be encouraged in the right way. So I think equipping leaders and managers in identifying when, what style, what approach I should be using is also important. Not everybody needs to be led and managed in the same way. But also understanding that they as a top team are a team, and they will have strengths in the team, and to play to the strengths. It's like a football team. Are you playing the players in the best way possible? Not everybody's a good goalie. You know, so is that team working in the best way possible, capitalising and leveraging the strengths of the personalities and the working preferences of the people in the team? So we do team psychometrics, for example, as one of the things that we may do with a team is bring in some team psychometrics to help them understand how they work, but how they can work better than they already are by pooling the strengths of different working preferences in that team.
And so the psychometrics will identify that person's preference in style of working and behaviours or not?
Preferences. And remember, you know, I psychometrics are a tool. It's not the be all and end all, but it's an indication.
Yes.
It gives you an indication that this is the way that somebody might like to work, and this is the key strength that they can play in a team environment.
Yes.
And I think it's good to recognise that. And of course, if you're not aware of that, you could rub up against somebody the wrong way because you don't know why they behave in that way. You don't know why they don't want to do that type of work. And it might not be their preference. I mean, there might be some things you just have to do and you have to like it or lump it, but but generally, if we can give projects, you know, which capitalise on somebody's strength, then let's try and do that by understanding how each other work best in a team.
Yes, it can be quite enlightening, can't it? Once you realise what someone's preference is, it falls into place. You then suddenly think, oh, no wonder they hated doing that project that had a load of detail. And, when they're a bigger picture type person, yeah, they hate the detail.
There's so many light bulb moments when you get these reports out and people start to explore the team and the aha moments, you know, where they go, right, OK, I can see why that person likes to do that. I mean, when I worked in the AA, we did a lot of this at Team Psychometrics, and it really helped us because we as a training team were able to utilise different members of our team. We had a completer finisher, for example. You know, so we loved completing and finishing stuff. Let them do that sort of work if that's what they're best at, if that's what they enjoy. So by knowing that as a top team, that also helps you manage your team.
Yes, absolutely.
Because you start to recognise that in other people.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. Great, thank you. So there's quite a lot there. When I asked you the question about, you know, what common challenges do you see, you've given me loads of information. So I just wondered, you know, there's a lot there for an organisation to consider. So how do you help the organisations that are in this scale-up phase to prioritise?
Well, as I said, there's in Dragonfly, there's a core component, and part of that is having a very clear plan, a very clear set of goals as a top team. So that alignment piece is in effect a tool for prioritisation.
Right. Great.
And that is something that we will keep coming back to. Are we delivering on this plan together? So that very simply is the way that we help to prioritise. Also, we do bring in some principles around prioritisation. So we do some Stephen Covey work with the team, help them identify what might be going out of focus when it should be in focus. So we do some work around that. But that's really facilitation, helping the team to arrive at those decisions themselves. We're not telling them what to do. We're helping them to arrive at their own decisions around what are the priorities. But so, giving them tools like that are very practical.
So just remind me, the Stephen Covey model, was that the urgent, important, not urgent, not important? Right, so just talk through that a little bit.
Well, that's a you know, that's part of the training, really.
Oh, sorry.
but I mean, you know, come along. Come along, take a Dragonfly programme and learn all about it.
Sure, okay. It's a teaser for you there.
It is a teaser, because when it's applied, you know, some of the tools that we'll bring into a programme, when some of these tools are applied, it really does work if people execute well.
Yes.
If people execute well. Because as I always say, all training is a waste of time and money unless something changes. So we're trying to bring in skills, tools, focus, and to drive up capabilities, remember that make the business work better by helping the team work better.
Yes, yeah, and actually that's a time management, you know, tool that I use myself when I'm, you know, working out how to structure my day or my week, or thinking, gosh, what have, you know, how can I make my time more efficient? I'll then think about, you know, actually, is my time being dragged down by non-urgent tasks or not important tasks? Where should my efforts be focused for the best use of my time this week, for example? So yeah, it's go along to Dragonfly.
You're a convert.
Brilliant. Cool. So I guess I just wanted to touch on, you know, scaling up is a period of change and transition, which can be challenging. What advice can you provide for leaders and managers during this time?
Well, I think make sure you're equipped for change, and make sure that you're equipping your leaders for the change ahead. So think about what skills will help you through the scale up phase. How are you equipping your top team? Because I think the top team are essential to the business growth. You get that right, and you're on the right pathway. So I think, how are you equipping your leaders and managers with the skills that they need through the journey? How do you become, because we're continual learners, you know, well, that's what humans are, continual learners. How are you going to upskill? You know, what skills do you need for the change ahead, for the journey ahead? So I think, if I was to say, you know, what do you need? I think it's, you need to answer those questions.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah, absolutely. I agree. And again, when you were talking about common challenges in scaling up businesses, you mentioned not letting go. And I think that must be a really key leaders perhaps struggling to let go or delegate, because I think, you get to a certain point in a business and you might be used to doing quite a lot yourself because you haven't had the team or the skills, you know, around you. So you've it's been sort of all hands on deck. I think not letting go must be one of the key things there, I think, really. And, I've worked with a client recently where, you know, the business has been founded by, the entrepreneur, and they're growing. And I was interested to learn that the MD has brought in a CEO, actually, because I think he recognised that, you know, if he continued in the way he was going, he was actually going to be a significant hindrance to the progress of his own business. And I think that's a really bold move, but I think really sensible, because he just recognised that he's got, well, we were talking before about strengths and preferences. So to play to your own strengths and preferences, and let yourself, you know, get on with what you like to do, where your area of strength is. And he recognised that he had, you know, obviously limitations, as we all do, and brought in someone to plug a few of his own gaps, because actually to lead a team and do, you know, an awful lot else involved in running your own business was actually hindering the progress of his own business. So I think
that sounds like a very enlightened entrepreneur there. And I think, you know, in a scale up, you might find that the team will change roles. And I've seen as well with my clients exactly the same, where the entrepreneur that started the business doesn't end up being the CEO, because they recognise that they are not equipped with the experience. So they bring somebody in that's already scaled up a business or has the people and leadership skills that they don't have, because they actually enjoy the technical nature of that role.
Yeah.
And they want to just perfect the product or perfect the service in some way. They don't really want to manage a team, and they can recognise that. The earlier you recognise that, the better. You know, because scaling a business is all about getting the right people doing the right things.
At the right time.
At the right time, exactly. So I think the other challenge that you have is when you have the default leader thinking they always have to have the answer.
Yes.
You know, they have to be the one that everybody goes to for every type of answer. No. You're bringing in talent, you're bringing in skills, you're bringing in experience for the business. And that's what you have to have in mind when it comes to talent and growth, is what we're doing is we're recruiting in expertise, skills, capability and experience to help the business grow. Everything else is secondary, or should be.
Yeah, brilliant. Yes, thank you. Great. So for a scaling up business, Richard, when should they be looking at, getting you involved, so to speak?
Well, I would say the earliest possible, because there will be, I do get calls when it's a team is not working well. So before that happens, and that could be that you've got new members of the top team coming into the business, because that's when dynamics are going to change and need some support. So the earlier the better is what I would say. But some of the symptoms that you'll see, which you definitely need to pick up the phone, is when you're starting to see dysfunctional team working. Mm. Or my God, this team doesn't have a plan and we don't know where we're going.
Mm.
Or I don't think everybody's clear on their role and what they're trying to achieve, what we're trying to achieve together. That's the time to pick up the phone. And also to recognise when we need some training infrastructure. You know, that we need to bring somebody in from training to help us build our core programmes. You know, I mentioned about my experience at Orange, where we were scaling up the retail part of the business.
Mm.
it was very important to build our core programs. You need an induction program, not just for staff, but for managers.
Mm.
You need training programs in the products or the services that you're offering. So I think you need, as a scale-up, you will come to a trigger, a tipping point, where you need those core programs, because if you don't, you won't scale properly, because you won't get consistency of your brand to customers, because the people are doing their own thing in their own way rather than consistently. So that's why you need to build your core programs in-house.
Yes.
That's another trigger point. And I say the other one is from a sales perspective is, because we obviously do work with sales teams, is when sales targets aren't being achieved, something's going wrong.
Sure.
And that sometimes it is a capability issue. Sometimes there's other things going on. And I haven't said this during our interview, but obviously one thing that I really do put a lot of emphasis on, and my customers will tell you this, is the diagnostic.
Right.
And I can't tell you how important it is to do a proper diagnostic.
So this is the first stage.
The first stage. Yeah. Every intervention for me is let's understand the problem. Let's understand what we're fixing. And then go away and bring in the right solution, as opposed to what I call off the shelf.
Yes. Yes. Great, thank you. So when you mentioned management induction, this is if you've brought a new manager in or someone's got promoted, it's explaining to them, you know, the way the processes work in that business, making sure they have adequate skills and training to make sure that they are effective in their management role.
You pay a lot out in terms of recruiting managers and leaders in a business. So don't let them sink or swim. Give them adequate investment up front to make them as effective as possible, as quickly as possible. And your way in running your business will be very different to where they were managing others in a different business, because, you know, you want people managing your way, not their way.
Yes, absolutely. So it's, you know, it's as simple as, and this is quite operational, but, you know, as simple as if a member of the team, you know, calls in sick, what are the notification procedures? What should that manager be doing in terms of, you know, what happens next when that person comes back to work? You know, the holiday booking procedures, you know, recruitment, interviewing. So if someone comes for an interview, are the managers, you know, is the experience that the candidate's having consistent across different departments, or actually are the managers giving a quite different impression? Because particularly now in the current recruitment climate, you know, it's difficult to recruit. And so managers need to be equipped with those skills and giving candidates a good impression and a good experience when they come for interview.
Yeah, and I think, you know, this is again, you know, Polly, where you come in. If, you know, make the right decisions when you're recruiting in the top team. So do bring in, you know, someone like yourself when you're making very senior appointments, because it's worth the weight in gold having somebody with a HR experience and recruitment experience helping you make the right decision.
Mm, yes, indeed. Absolutely. Thank you, Richard. Right. We're coming to the end of our time. Do you have any final thoughts you just wanted to share?
You know, I think just in summary, you know, the top team of a scale-up is really important. Getting that team working well, really focused on their plans, what they're trying to achieve, making sure that they're equipped with the skills that they need as they scale up. Don't have a tick box approach to training. Make sure that you have a sustained approach to training your top teams, because we are all growing always, and you need a training plan, you know, for that top team to succeed. And there will be tools, there will be principles and concepts that you can bring to a top team to help them perform effectively. And we've touched on some of them. You do need to make sure that when you're bringing in a provider, someone like me, that they are equipped and adaptable, because I think, as we've discussed earlier, you need to be able to adapt to what the needs are of that team and that business at that time. And if you haven't got the experience in dealing with those sorts of scenarios, then you might find the provider isn't particularly good. Mm. So make sure they're qualified as well. A lot of training consultancies or a lot of trainers out there aren't qualified.
Oh, that's interesting.
How many companies check that the person that is coming in to do the job as a trainer is qualified?
So what qualification would you expect, or would you be checking?
A CIPD qualification, right, at the very least.
Right.
Because, you know, you and I, both CIPD qualified.
Yes.
We get taught how the learning process works, how to facilitate, how to train. All these things are pretty essential components. And if you don't understand the psychology of learning, organisational consultancy, strategic L&D, core management, if you haven't got those qualifications, are you really equipped to be training managers?
Yeah, that's a really good point. Thank you. Great, thank you. So if people would like to carry on the conversation or find out more about the Dragonfly Academy, where can they find your contact? What are your contact details, or how can they find out more?
Well, I'm on LinkedIn as the Training Alchemist.
Yes,
which,
indeed.
if you just look up the Training Alchemist, there's only one of those on LinkedIn. that's one way to find me. The other way is my website, which is www.hewlettrand.com. That's www.hewlettrand.com. Just reach out to me. But, as a final note, thanks, Polly, for interviewing me today. And hopefully there's something there for people to take away.
Yeah, brilliant. Thank you so much. It's been a really great conversation, and thank you for your time.